Good morning.
Good morning.
Grateful for the crowd that we do have here today. In many ways, I do believe that that's a very appropriate song that we were just led in here. This world is not my home. I think in some ways it will tie in pretty good with the lesson that we have here for today. I'd ask that you take your Bibles and open to Luke chapter 16. In Luke 16, we shall find our lesson. Now here in Luke 16, we have what is generally understood to be a parable, though it is not said to be a parable. Yet this is a story that Jesus shares about a certain rich man who had a prodigal, which is to say a wasteful steward, a wasteful servant. And it is commonly referred to as the parable of the unjust steward. And let me say here at the outset that I do believe that this is one of the most challenging illustrations that Jesus ever used. And when I say challenging, it's because it seems, at least at the first read, that there are some moral questions that are raised. And we're going to talk about that. But I'll just let you know here at the get-go that I do believe that at heart, at essence, this is a parable about going to heaven and doing what is necessary, what it takes to get there. I think that I will title this lesson then, Forward Thinking, the Parable of the Unjust Steward. Let's go ahead and read through this, and then we shall make some observations. He also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses.' So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, "And how much do you owe?" So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, "Take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Now, in looking at that right there, at a first read, some might be thinking, what exactly am I supposed to really get out of this? I mean, here we've gone through this now, and it seems that there might be some statements here that seem unrelated, a little disconnected. And more to the point, am I supposed to understand here that in some way, dishonest dealings, cheating, and crooked transactions are somehow commendable and approved? And the answer there is an emphatic no. The master of this man does not commend him because he was deceitful, but rather because he dealt shrewdly. Now there's going to be a difference here. And Jesus is drawing a contrast with the sons of this world and the sons of light, who would be who? The disciples. We're looking at us right there. And what he is saying is that worldly-minded men will often know how to take care of themselves for this world. We're not talking about the world to come. We're not talking about eternity. But they know how to look after themselves when it comes to matters that pertain to this life and this world. And when even the ungodly realize and recognize that they are in a pinch, that they are in a bit of a quandary, in a bind, stuck between a rock and a hard place, a bad spot, they will often do whatever it takes. They're going to scratch and claw. They're going to get creative. They're going to be thinking outside of the box. They're going to knock down doors. They'll climb over walls. They will manipulate a situation, all in desperation to stay in the running, to stay in the game, so to speak, to stay ahead. Jesus Christ is certainly not commending distortions or underhanded dealings. But Jesus is chiding his disciples for at times failing to be forward-thinking, for at times failing to recognize a bigger picture, and for at times failing to know what needs to be done here and now so as to secure a better future. So here we have a steward. He was going to be let go because of some type of mismanagement. Now, whether we're looking here at bad investments that he had been making, or whether we're talking here about poor oversight and bookkeeping problems, whatever it was, an accusation or charge was brought to his master. So others saw this, they witnessed it, and they reported him. And they said that at best, he is being prodigal, he is being wasteful, irresponsible, incompetent. Why, he is just unfit for the job and the position and the status that he occupies. And so the master, upon learning this, says, well, guess what? You know what? I think I've heard enough right now. You come over here, sir. You are fired. Clear out your desk. I want you gone. You're done. Or at least you have the writing on the wall about all of that. And when this steward first hears about this, what's his reaction? You see, it's as though he is going into panic mode, as it were. And the wheels are turning quickly and rapidly, and he's analyzing and viewing scenarios and different kinds of options here, and he's doing what he can to eliminate a number of them. He says, I cannot dig. Now, was he handicapped? We're not told. Had his status made him soft to manual labor? Did pride get in the way? We're just not told. But he says, I can't do that there. I'm just not going to be rolling up the sleeves and getting that shovel. He says, I'm ashamed to beg. Well, it's embarrassing here, especially so since he had been a high and mighty steward. And now it's just going to be bad. It's going to look terrible. He's going to be made the laughingstock of the town if he's seen out and about there passing the hat. Well, he gets a spark of inspiration in a moment of great desperation. It's as though a light bulb comes on and he says, aha, aha, I know what I'm going to do here. I've got a plan. I've got a strategy. Now, what we have to understand about this is that when you're looking there at ancient culture, and I believe that parallels are certainly seen even today, but here in this time, it was customary that if you did for someone, they were in turn then obligated to do back for you. And in most cases, they'd be eager to help out and assist and be of service, especially when it came to your hour of need. So here is a man who is forward-thinking, and a plan which he incubated there in his mind is soon going to be hatched there in verses 4 through 7. He calls his master's debtors one by one, and what does he ask them? He has but one question. I've just got one question for you here. How much do you owe? Now they are as tenants underneath a landlord. They work the land, but payment comes in at harvest time. And a portion of that harvest they owe to their master. And how much did one owe? One who had, say, olive trees on his land, he owed 100 measures of oil, which corresponds to about 900 gallons on the year. So the steward says, well, let's do this quickly now. Let's work fast here. Haste is the name of the game. You're going to be happy. Take your bill, write 50, which is about 450 gallons. So how is that for a discount? How is that for some savings? How is that for a deduction? Didn't that just brighten your day? And sure it would. Now you over here, you come over here. What are you in debt for? Well, I got to churn out 100 measures of wheat. That's upwards 1,200 bushels. All right, not today anymore. Take your bill, write 80. Or 960 bushels. And so maybe to paraphrase, you could say, maybe he's telling me, you just going out there and buy the missus and the kids something really nice. I mean, he called every one of his master's debtors to him, and this joker is just cutting deals left and right. What do you think about him? I think that at this stage here, he's got a bit of a grin that's emerging on his complexion, on his face there. I mean, it's just getting bigger all the time as he's doing this, man after man after man. Now, this steward had authority to act on behalf of the master. So you see, if the steward said, oh, this happens to be 50% off, or this over here, this is 20% off, it was as though the master himself had said, 50 off, 20 off. You follow that? And let me tell you something else. I'm fully of the mind that this steward knew the law. He knew what legally he could, quote, get away with, so that the master could not press charges, apparently. And that's why he doesn't say, well, take your bill and write 5, or take your bill and just write 0. Debt canceled. Debt fully paid. It was such to where when the master learned what had happened here, what exactly had transpired, it was just plumb too late to do anything about this. And all he could say at the end of this day was, he got me. I mean, that stinker there, he got me. I just got to suck it up, take it in the gut, and count my losses. May as well tip the hat to that man here. Because, boy, he pulled a fast one on me. That over there, that is Slick Willie. And I commend him. I salute him for being shrewd and clever. You see, because what did he do? When he found himself coming upon a bad spot, he discovered and he figured out a way in which he would be okay. And I have no doubt for one moment here, but that he became one of the most popular heroes of folklore for those peasants at that time. How could they not appreciate him? And they would be happy, more than happy, to do favors for him in turn. Oh, don't you see? In being cut loose here, he had plenty of places to go, many houses to stay in, many meals to enjoy. And so Jesus says, let me here tell you this story. Because sometimes dishonest men and men who are treacherous towards their own masters know how to take heed to their self-preservation and their future. When my people, this is where the rubber hits the road, when my people don't know what to do. Now that is serious, isn't it? He's talking squarely here to his own people. We're looking at God's people now. And so verse 9, after talking about this story here, now he's talking to us, to you and to me. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting homes, eternal dwellings. Now, this is problematic because as Christians, We are inclined to sometimes feel that money can be a little dirty, that it's potentially bad, and there are dangers associated with great riches. But let's not lose sight of how it is the love of money, not money itself, that is the root of all kinds of evil. Money is simply what? Money is simply a tool. It can be used as a weapon. It can also be used as a trap, a means of alluring and enticing. But it's still just a tool. And a tool can be used responsibly. That's the idea here. So what are we saying? Are you saying, preacher, that you have to, quote, buy your friends? That you're not going to have friends unless you can purchase them? No. You're barking up the wrong tree there. That is not the focus. We're not making money the focus. We're making people the focus. We're talking here about friendships. We're talking here about relationships and connections. That is the ultimate focus right here. And so now I've thought a long time about this here, and I believe what you could do is do yourself a favor here. And for unrighteous mammon, you could substitute the phrase, all your physical blessings. All your physical blessings. Your life, your health, your wealth, your time, your resources, your house, the job that you have. That when you fail, and by the way, most translations say that when it fails, the physical blessings, when they fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. You see, we sometimes face a misunderstanding that I'm convinced prevents us from thinking forward properly, thinking ahead. You know, we're inclined at times to see our blessings as being there for us, to serve us. I'm going to tell you right here and right now, that is not why they're there. That is not why you have what you have. What you have is given to you by God, ultimately toward the end, that you could use it to glorify God and His purposes. Meaning then, by extension, that it is there, those blessings are there to serve others toward the end. Watch it now. Toward the end, that you are drawing them to God Himself. Now that's a lot, but that's what it's there for. You see, there's going to come a time when your physical blessings will fail. Say, preacher, run that by me again. Your physical blessings are going to fail. Your health, as robust and as stout and as strong, or as young and as vibrant as you are, I've got news for you. You're going to fail. It won't last forever. The question, you see, is not whether or not you had a life. You have a life. But what is the ultimate question? The question is, what are you doing with it? What am I doing with it? Now, we sometimes hear that expression, well, it's your life or it's our life. And that's right, but it's also not entirely right. Because in another way, it is not our life. We belong to God. And let me tell you right now, everything that you have, it ultimately belongs to God. The life that you have, it's God's. Your health, it's God's. Your time, God's. The job and the money that you make, God's. The house that you live in, it belongs to the Almighty. The car that you drive, God's. Your spouse, God's. The children that you're blessed with, let me tell you right now, they belong to God. All that we lay eyes upon, all that is physical here in this material realm, it shall fail. But the question is, what did we do with it while we had it? You know, you could be a highfalutin CEO of a company, and that's going to fail. It shall. There's a news flash right there. And if you think in some way that you are put there just to have your ego stroked or that you were put there so as to just make tons and tons of money so that you could have a humongous mansion of a house. You are wrong. It never, ever was about you. You reflect on this. We probably have every major field represented here. School teachers and administrators, people in the medical field. Now watch this. Watch where we're going. If you think as a school teacher that your job is simply just to teach kids, I believe with all my heart that you're mistaken about that. Does that surprise you? Does that sound shocking? If you do work, say, as a doctor, if you think that you're there simply to prescribe, simply to try and treat people so that they can be healed, so that they can find a remedy, I think you're mistaken. It's about the people that are there, the relationships that you have, the friends that you can make, you see, because they're not our friends. I don't really know them, but you know who they are. And God puts you there for a reason. It's about drawing them toward the Lord Jesus Christ. Do the people that you work with know that you're a true child of God? Do they know that you're a Christian serving Christ in His body, the Church of Christ? There was a woman in Sharpsburg, Georgia, just south of Atlanta. I went down there not that long ago to attend a gospel meeting. 5 years. 5 years she was working as a school administrator. And in the break room, she was talking with a man. And after 5 years, he became a Christian. You see what I'm getting at? She got it. Verse 10. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is dishonest in what is least is dishonest also in much. Now that's how it's put there in most translations. What does that mean? To boil it down, what you are is what you are. Who you are is who you are, it's who you are. It doesn't mean that you always have to be that way, but as of now, who you are is who you are, trusted or not. Verse 11. Therefore, here's the conclusion. If you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? Remember what I said here at the outset? This is what type of a lesson? It's a lesson about getting to heaven and doing what is necessary, what it takes to secure that, to have that hope, to have that future. Do we have the foresight, the forward thinking to recognize what God has blessed us with so that we could use it for His glory and for His purposes? I do believe that in a veiled way, that this quote, other man here, of verse 12, when it says, if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, that is ultimately God. Now sure, it's applicable to any master or lender, but true riches are that which matter most. And the greatest of riches are found with who? They're found with God in heaven above. And if you have not been faithful with what is God's, with what He has given you as a steward, how can He give you what is your own? What is truly lasting and eternal? How did Jesus Himself put that? In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. That can be, you see, what is your own. Because nothing that we have here in life below can we take with us. And in essence, God is saying, I cannot give you heaven if you did not use what you had in life below, if you misunderstood what all of it was really about. You know, I'm going to confess this here, that I used to lie to myself. That if I just had this or if I just had that, I could be a better servant for God. We're not good servants now unless we open up our eyes to see what we do have, what God has trusted us with. What's it going to take? Are we in the business of trying to make deals with God? We have it all backwards. Some people say, oh, if I just had a bigger house, then I could be hospitable. Do you have a house now? Use it. I'm sure that in the first century, not every Christian had an extremely large house. And yet they were still going from house to house, visiting each other and encouraging each other in the faith. Brethren were hospitable. Well, we don't have enough chairs to seat everybody. Have you thought about just getting creative here? Maybe some could sit on the floor. Maybe you could move some furniture here and there, move a table. Have you thought about just being friendly to people that you meet? How about starting right there? That word hospitable, it means love of strangers. And yet we can struggle when it comes to our own brethren, much less strangers. And just this past week, I was up at a Bible study at Stone Mountain. And there were people there that I'd never met in my life. And here was an older woman sitting to my right just before the study began. And asked her some questions. And in answering, she actually looked over to the person sitting there to her right. I'm like, I'm over here on the left, but, you know, I'm trying to communicate with her, but she doesn't make eye contact. And so I said, well, let me ask a few more questions. And still, yet again, she looked over to the person there on her right in answering. I said, I'm going to be a little more persistent here. And I asked even more questions. And little by little, she started to look over my way, made eye contact, and smiled. And let me tell you something else. She started to ask me some questions as well. Well, she was shy. I'm sure she was just shy. But I got to know about her. And she learned about me. And we were there for a Bible study, and our hearts were in the right place. And guess what? She'd be able to leave there remembering that here was a young man who came to help out with a Bible study that had been going on for years. But he showed interest in that. And he was a friendly fellow. And we like to be around people that are friendly. Make friends for yourselves by all your physical blessings, that when those physical blessings fail, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. On Monday and Tuesday, I was up in Chattanooga supporting a gospel meeting. I met a lot of fine, friendly Christians there at the North Hickson Church of Christ. And I took initiative. I wasn't waiting for people to come to me. I was taking that first step to get to know who they were with the limited time that I had. One couple that I met for the very first time on that Tuesday of that meeting, they later wrote to me, and I'll share just a portion of this. They said, hey, it was so great to meet you and spend time with you. You are always welcome into our lives and home. Let us know if you're ever in the area again, and you can stay at our place. And we'd gone out to eat after that gospel meeting. We spent a lot of good time together, quality time, investing in each other's lives. And I made the observation, I made the comment at the end that it feels like we've known each other for our whole lives. Well, they added here at the end, we also feel like we've known you forever. You see how quick that can be? That's the idea. Taking time to get to know people, sacrificing to get to know them. It makes all the difference in the world. And let me tell you here, the people that we meet in life, I don't think it's just by mere chance. God brings them our way to see how we shall handle that situation. So that is a huge wake-up call. What are we doing with all of those opportunities? And so you see here, I'm of the mind that really the rest of this makes perfect and complete sense, doesn't it? Verse 13, no servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon or money. When you use your blessings to fulfill God's work, you're getting the point. But when you use your blessings just to serve yourself, you are missing the point. You're just making it about stuff in the end. And that stuff you can never, ever take with you. Now look there at verse 14. Now the Pharisees, you see, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things and they derided him. They mocked him because they loved their stuff. It was largely about them and their status in life, the great following that they could accumulate. And Jesus here calls them out on all of that, doesn't he? He said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but watch it, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God." And to be perfectly honest, before we get too critical of them, maybe, we should be asking ourselves, have we tried to, quote, justify ourselves? Oh God, I'd be like this here. I'd be super Christian if you could just give me this right over here. Or I would do this for you if only I could just have that. I'd be a super Christian. Well, let me tell you right now, you're not a super Christian right now because you don't recognize that you have it within your power to become that with all that you have right now and nothing more. You ask and you do not receive because you ask amiss. Why? That you might spend it on your pleasures. James 4, verse 3. God knows our hearts, doesn't He? He knows why we are coming to Him. He knows why we are approaching Him. He knows why it is that we are asking for what it is that we are asking. And God cannot give it to you if your motivations are not pure and right. Let me tell you this, that when we look at it from this angle, it hurts. It hurts, doesn't it? It's very painful. Because we had been as that bad steward, making poor choices, having an incorrect attitude and outlook on life. And what was the end result? It cost us the stewardship. It cost us that. But God is wanting to see what we are going to do right now with what is left. So that when all is said and done, if we have used what is left properly, we might be received into an everlasting home. Time is of the essence. Make haste. Even as He says it here, right? Sit down quickly and write 50. Do favors for people. Be about good deeds. You see, because you never ever know when you're going to need a good deed or a favor returned back to you. Make friends of God's children. Help those who are weak, forgetting in nothing His blessings to seek. And make no mistake, God is more than eager to give you heaven. He wants to give you heaven. But you have to be faithful here in life below. You have to be loyal to Him. You have to put Him first and show that in your actions and in your attitude. And then He can give you what is your own. We want that, don't we? Let it be there in our heart. We encourage you to become a Christian today. Believe and obey the gospel. Be baptized for the remission of your sins. Use each day, use each moment for the Father's glory. Become a Christian. If you've been misusing your time and talents, what God has blessed you with, if you've not been thinking forward properly, then repent. And we're here to help in that way. If you're subject to the invitation, come down to the front while together we stand now and sing.